Today is Thursday. It is September 21st, 2017. It is the last full day of summer before the fall of this year. And boy, does it feel like summer today. I'm John Williams, and this is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record in the studios of WGN Radio. Okay, Eric, now what am I supposed to say?
Can I take it?
Yes.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch and the news anchor during The John Williams Show, Monday through Fridays from 1 to 3.
Scott?
I'm Scott Stanis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City, and I listen daily to John Williams on WGN.
I'm Eric Zorn, the highly educated columnist from the Chicago Tribune, a big fan of John Williams, who's on from 1 to 3 p.m. every day, and he has a Saturday morning show.
What's this all about?
What's that? Why am I highly agitated? Or why are we promoting your show?
The last part.
Because Johanna Zorn, the audio queen, made the point of, and a fan of the Mincing Rascals, pointed out that you're promoting every week, you were promoting the rebroadcast of this podcast on your Saturday show, which
right.
people are already listening to
right.
and can listen to again, because the miracle of podcasts is you can listen to this many
right,
times.
Right, so they don't need to go to the radio show to hear the podcast or even the podcast again.
That they're now listening to.
I should use that time to promote something else.
Yes, like your show, your daily show from 1 to 3 p.m. on WGN.
And just like that, we've lost 2 minutes of the Mincing Rascals.
By the way, save the date and get your tickets for Podcast Fest. We're recording this show live at the Chicago Podcast Festival, Saturday, October 7th, from the Old Town School of Folk Music. We always do this in private in the studio with Ben and Aleph, but you'll be able to see us at 4544 North Lincoln Avenue at the Old Town School, and we do it live on stage, Saturday, October 7th at 7 p.m. You can get your tickets by going to WGNradio.com/events. Nick DiGilio fans, Kelly Leonard fans, they'll be performing their podcast there as well. I'm really looking forward to seeing some of our listeners and giving you a chance to ask us questions or suggest topics for us to kick around.
Rex Hupke says they're not going to be swearing on their podcast this time. You know, Rex and Amy Goof have a podcast that's full of swear words.
It is. It uses language that I think is inappropriate, even in the stream. Okay, so you're agitated. Anything else you want to say about that?
I'm just highly agitated, that's all.
Lots of topics.
I thought he said educated.
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah. I think he said agitated.
I did. I'm highly
Why
educated.
Why did I think
too.
Educated?
I'm over-educated.
So I want to talk about the president's speech to the UN. I want to talk about the Ken Burns series, which is running on PBS this week. But let's start with some local topics first. Is it possible for Chicago or Illinois to give Amazon too much to attract those 50,000 jobs here, which they say, this is hard to believe, will pay on average $100,000? That means somebody must be getting $1 zillion and everybody else is getting $18 an hour. But still, 50,000 jobs. And what is the most attractive thing to lure Amazon here? What is our greatest asset? And what do you think is the biggest hurdle to keep them from coming here? Steve, you go first.
Well, probably the big asset is the city itself, the beauty of the city, the location of it, the transportation of the whole thing. And as far as detriment, I mean, Amazon and Illinois had a rough history, right, over the taxes and things like that. I know it was ultimately resolved, but probably the fiscal situation and the fact that maybe Illinois is not going to be in a position to give away as much as other people might.
Yeah, I think we'll insulate them from all of the things that kind of bother me. Like, we want them to pay for infrastructure. We want to pay some of the human costs. We want them to pay taxes. But I'll bet we're going to give them the cookie store,
the candy store,
to get those jobs. And they don't do that for smaller jobs. They don't do that for you and me. So it's a kind of, I don't know, socialism isn't the right word. What's the word where?
Didn't they lure you back here, John, with promises of all kinds of tax advantages? That's what I heard.
What are your thoughts, Scott?
Well, the asset. As Steve said, I mean, it's a gorgeous city. It's a fabulous city. It has a world-renowned restaurants, has a world-class airport, which is one of the prerequisites they wanted. The detriment is massive, and I think a deal killer from the taxes are onerous to the extreme. Crime is growing, and violent crime particularly, and schools are terrible. So, and there's terrible leadership and political leadership in the state.
Schools aren't terrible for people who make more than $100,000 a year.
I could see that, though. If you're going to China, if you are going to put your kids, your employees and their children in any place in the United States, and they had to go to a city that was famous for underperforming public schools and has the reputation as the shootingest place in America, you would be asking yourself, we couldn't go to San Diego, or San Diego's maybe geographically a bad location. But I don't know, St. Louis, which, by the way, has a higher shooting per capita ratio than we do.
Indianapolis had their 100th murder this week.
100th.
100th. I don't know how that compares per capita.
Per capita.
But we had our 500th shooting last weekend.
I think
weekend.
The perception shooting. Of crime is probably the biggest thing.
Well, I mean, it's the difference.
They're better aim? What's the difference? Getting shot still
Well, comparing
stinks.
100 murders in Indianapolis to 500 shootings in Chicago are apples and oranges. That's my point.
Our population is more than five times larger than Indianapolis.
Let me add to the advantages of Chicago, the cultural environment here, the music, the theater, all that other stuff's here. We attract a lot of young people here. A lot of young people are moving to the city. A lot of talent, tech talent. We also have a really good set of universities.
We attract some. We're not nearly as aggressive and as effective as a lot of other cities in America for the reasons I just mentioned.
You know, the lakefront is an asset that we have that is just about unparalleled in any other major city. It would be a great place for them to be. Disadvantages have already been mentioned.
Oh, one more.
Let me say, I think
what blanket speaks.
The weather is kind of lousy. But, you know, our income tax, state income tax is still relatively low, even at about 5%. Our state income tax is relatively low.
Buy a soda.
Okay. I mean, they clearly are, and I think actually the main thing, I think all those things are, you know, they come out in the wash when you're looking at places. But when you're looking at the financial instability of the future of the state, you know, the pension debt, those kind of things, I think those things will play into their consideration.
You know, people say the weather, but tell me where the weather's so good that you want to move your company and 50,000 people there. You want to go to the Southwest where it's 110 degrees today? Do you want to go to Florida where they have hurricanes?
Want to go to Atlanta where it's so humid?
Right.
I mean,
St. Louis is I'll take our weather over St. Louis any day. You got the whole East Coast, which is exposed to more storms, more violent storms now than ever. So tell me where the perfect weather is.
Perfect
weather?
San Francisco. No, that's
you're on the West Coast. And by the way, San Francisco had a heat record this 2 weeks ago. It was 103 degrees.
I was there for it.
It's also
I brought it with me,
It's also way too expensive, and it's way too close to Seattle. They seem to want to get away from that. One city I'd mention is Nashville. It is hot and humid, but their winters are mild. The summers aren't, you know, deathly. And it has an international airport, and it's a booming community.
And we should give them whatever they want, too, right? Like any kind of infrastructure, any kind of tax incentives, any kind of tax breaks. They don't have to pay taxes on the money they earn from here or
Axios did a story. Actually, they were looking at someone else who did the study, I think. But Walmart has paid, and I forget the period of years, but it's still a good example. I think it's like 46 times the amount of income tax that Amazon has paid over the same period. Because Amazon is reinvesting in the company, not paying out dividends. Walmart's paying out dividends. So when you talk about corporate citizenship, they're not paying a lot in taxes because of the way they're holding their money.
Hmm. Well, I just...
But yes, I say give them the farm.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, boy, if you lose this because you were pinching your wallet, then you'll seem like a fool right now, I guess.
Well, it may be that Wisconsin has given away too much for the Foxconn factory. That didn't seem to me to be nearly as attractive as this. As this Amazon. I mean, you mentioned the low wages thing. I mean, this is not an Amazon warehouse we're talking about. This is a secondary corporate headquarters. This is for executives and engineers and people who are actually earning a lot of money. I think it's a really good thing for them.
I came here from the Birmingham News in Alabama, and Alabama went through this very thing. There's a very aggressive bidding for a Mercedes plant. They won it. Everyone was, you know, whining that they gave away the store. Well, what's happened in the meantime over the last decade is they've gotten three new automobile plants. They have Airbus is now going to put produce its first airplane later this year in Mobile. So it's created itself as and positioned itself as a manufacturing base for the country.
You know what I think maybe I'm doing, Scott, is apples and oranges. But having moved here recently from Minnesota and having witnessed how the state of Minnesota gave to a set of billionaire brothers everything for the funding of a football stadium. So they have a $1 billion stadium that the billion-dollar brothers were virtually given by the state so that we could keep the Minnesota Vikings. Because the Vikings, the same way Amazon could say, said, we'll go somewhere else if you don't give us what we want. We'll move the team to Los Angeles or Las Vegas. We'll go somewhere else. So you build them the stadium to keep the team, and then you're sort of glad they're there, but you also have a bad taste in your mouth.
Well, that's third-rate field, or the Cell was the same thing.
It
was
I don't think it's third-rate field. I don't think that's the name of it. What's the name of the field?
Comiskey.
I think it's Chico's Bail Bonds or something.
It's always Comiskey.
Guaranteed rate field.
Guaranteed rate field.
Comiskey.
Let's talk about
Can I say one One other thing, though?
Sure.
That we haven't talked about is this theory, the opposite theory, that all of these jobs coming in, these high-paying jobs, will increase the cost of living, increase the cost of housing, and actually be bad for lower-income people because the cost of living here will go up so much.
Hmm.
Anyway, there's that to consider.
Okay, then let's not do it.
No, let's do it.
Lisa Madigan, Eric, you wrote about that. It's sort of old news this week, but I thought you had a pretty interesting observation this week when you said maybe it's not crazy that somebody doesn't define themselves by their political ambitions.
Well, we've been talking about Lisa Madigan and her ambitions going back since she was first elected in 2002. Like, she's on her way she's looking to grab the next rung of the
ladder.
She's
Illinois' current Attorney General.
Current Attorney General. Her father, of course, is the Speaker of the House, veteran Speaker of the House. And in 2009, there was lots of talk that she was going to run for governor, going to run for Senate. And she gave an announcement saying, you know, no, I'm not going to do that. I like the job I have now. We were all saying, well, what's her secret plan? She's not going to run for governor or senator, but she's going to run for mayor. That's what it is. We've been thinking all along that Lisa Madigan has some Machiavellian plan, that she's playing three-dimensional chess and with her political future. And she has continued to step back from opportunities to, like I say, to grab at the next rung on the ladder. And this time, roughly a week ago, she said she's not going to run for re-election as Attorney General and has no other plans to run for public office. And so we're all thinking, well, okay, she's laying in wait. She's going to get a
people can't fathom that.
She wants a Supreme Court seat.
Yeah.
She wants there are all these theories, and I'm just saying it's possible. And I know it sounds naive and kind of crazy, but maybe at 51 she's done this and she doesn't want to be governor of this crap show that's Illinois. She doesn't want to be mayor of this city and all the problems that it has. And she likes a more normal life. She can make a much more money working as a partner at a Chicago law firm, which she'd have no trouble doing. And she's like, you know, hey, maybe there's someone out there who just in politics who doesn't love this life. And if you look at a third of the legislature is bailing out now also. They're like, you know, who needs this? Maybe she just doesn't want to be the next president.
It's different because it was only one term, but it makes me think of Peter Fitzgerald a little bit. Where's Peter Fitzgerald now?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? The one-term senator that
everybody thought was angling for one thing and another.
One term and said, I'm not going to run again.
Well, one piece of revisionist history, and I want to correct it, is that Lisa Madigan was seriously considering a run for governor for 3.5 years ago.
Yes,
and stepped back because daddy wouldn't step down as Speaker of the House because he'll never die and he'll never leave that job.
That was a very strange story, wasn't it, though, that she raised like more than $4 million.
Yeah, really?
And she never bothered to ask her dad. There's something about that just didn't add up, but I don't know what it was.
Well, she said it would be unseemly for the Speaker of the House and the governor to be related. However, it's not unseemly for the Speaker of the House and the Attorney General, which, by the way, as long as she's been Attorney General, there has been no corruption in the state. So you have to hand it to her for that.
No, she's done some corruption investigations.
Horse feathers.
No, she has. The idea that Lisa Madigan was saying when she was raising money that this wasn't going to be a problem, and then suddenly she got to a point and she realized that it was going to be a problem and she bowed out. I don't know. Maybe she just decided that she looked at the lay of the land and said, I don't want to do this now. But, I mean, again, I just feel like we attribute to Lisa Madigan a level of ambition that she doesn't seem to actually have. So, anyway, that was my point.
The idea that she might not want to run for political office anymore and define herself that way makes me want her to run for political office all the more.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
She was on somebody's shortlist to be the first female president.
Yes, New York Times put her
several
on
years
list,
ago. Yeah. A young woman, a teenager, Kanika Jenkins, was found dead in a walk-in freezer at a hotel in Rosemont a couple of weeks ago. And it's still not clear on exactly what happened. Do you guys have any interest in the conspiracy theories out there, or at least the idea that something more pernicious than her drunk stumbling into the freezer and freezing to death there happened? Where's your head on this story right now?
I'm a great believer in Occam's razor, which is the most obvious solution is almost always the answer. And in this case, the video shows she was extremely intoxicated. She walked into the freezer. They have a video of her walking into the freezer.
Walking in the kitchen, but not
but you
walking,
don't see
oh, walking
her
through
enter
the kitchen.
There.
Okay. So talking to a reporter, but one of our reporters here at the Tribune who's covering this, and he's convinced. I mean, he gets notes, dozens of emails every morning, as you might imagine, of conspiracy people saying what happened there. I mean, I think it's a tragedy. I mean, a young lady passed away because of a ridiculous and sad decision she made that night. But I don't know that there's anything else.
I spent about an hour going down the rabbit hole of the conspiracy videos online watching. Yeah. And I want to spend some more time looking at them, but I'm not persuaded by what I've seen in those that anything other than, as Scott points out, Occam's razor, the simplest explanation. You see the videos of her wandering through the hotel hallways, stumbling into walls. She was clearly intoxicated. Now, did somebody, you know, put a Mickey in her drink or something like that to make her like that? And was somebody trying to do her in? I am all for people demanding that police do thorough investigations. Most times these conspiracy theories turn out to be nothing.
What do you think of that, though, pursuit of those conspiracy theories by citizens?
Mary Mitchell had a good column in Thursday morning Sun-Times talking about the fact that we need to take this level of scrutiny or this level of concern to some of these more solvable cases that actually are demonstrably murders on the South Side, where people know who did the shooting. And we need to, you know, this kind of energy should be put toward those kind of crimes, not this one, which does appear to be a very unfortunate accident.
The homeless squatters removed from the underpass of Lakeshore Drive have been removed. The city's going to do construction there. The city should be helping them find safe shelter. The city should also not let them return to the underpasses because they don't own that property. And these individuals need to get more involved in their own living arrangements. Everybody agrees with me on that? We can move on to the next topic.
You don't agree with you on that, do you?
Oh, I agree with every single thing.
Oh, you do? Okay. I thought
Why does that not sound reasonable to you?
Because I thought you didn't want them removed.
Oh, no.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had that upside down.
I think they should be removed because they don't own the property. I don't think they should be allowed to live there because they're in the way. Their living room should not be the sidewalk to get to the lake. And I don't think they should be allowed to return there. And this idea that we're victims of the city not finding us good accommodations is, I think, only half true. You're also victims of your own inability to find living arrangements for yourself. It's incumbent upon you to find a legal place to live. Some of these people are drug and alcoholics, and some of these people have mental issues, and the city should take that into consideration, but the solution should not be living under Lakeshore Drive.
I would agree that the solution should not be living under Lakeshore Drive and that the city should do more, that we need to do more to find affordable, safe housing for these people. And there was some talk, I think it was and maybe it was also in the Sun-Times, about creating like little mini houses.
Yeah.
Little tiny houses.
Tiny houses. They're going to do that. They're looking at it in Milwaukee with kids who are growing out of foster care. So if they've become too old to be in foster care and they look as if they might be susceptible to homelessness, I think the county board or the common council there approved buying several tiny houses for them.
I mean, it's not secure. It's not sanitary. It's not safe necessarily to be living in tents. And it isn't really fair to the people who live around there to have people occupy. And I was just out in Berkeley for the heat wave. And there are enormous tent communities out there. And I think that is a sign of some sort of failures of a city, of a municipality area to provide for safe, clean, affordable places for people to live. Well, at some point, I feel like it's almost a basic human right that we have to see if we can.
Yeah, I don't entirely agree with that, Eric. I mean, I really do think unless you are utterly unable to do that, to find a place for yourself to live, it is incumbent upon you to find a place for you to live. And it's incumbent upon you, if it's really difficult, for you to really work at it and then get some assistance. But squatters who just hold their hands and say, no, you have to find a better place for me, I think aren't making the effort that I have a nice house. I worked really hard to get it. Actually, I have a really small house now, and it's frustrating to me, but I worked really hard to get it. My house isn't nearly what I thought it was going to be by now in my life, but it's a result of my effort.
Yeah, but you point out the constellation of problems that some of these people have is really daunting. And so to say, you know, go out and pull yourself up by your bootstraps or find a place, work hard to find a place, that's much easier said than done in a lot of these cases.
Well, let me jump in. New York City did something which I thought was right and also humane. And they had, obviously, a street... street people problem, a profound one. And what they did is they sent the police out to collect them at sunset, around sunset. But on the other end of that was they, through nonprofits and through the city, they had enough sleeping spaces where they could take these guys in, and women as well. And if they refused, then they could be arrested for vagrancy.
Yeah, the shelter system, and it's been a while since I've reported on this, but I have spent time reporting on the shelter system, and they let you in at 6 o'clock at night. They give you a bologna sandwich and let you sleep in a bunk, and then they kick you out sometimes at like 6 in the morning. And so it's not stable. it's not a place where you can then a locus from when you can find a job or you can get you can start climbing up. And so, you know, I think a shelter system is not the way to go. I think we need to find something that's permanent, that is a residence, that gives people an address, gives people a lock on the door, sanitary conditions, and so on. That's how you're going to start, you know, creating these things. And I think to try to put Band-Aids on it, that what New York did, that actually doesn't sound all that great. It doesn't sound like it's going to solve the problem. It may put a Band-Aid on it for a while.
Well, but if you put someone and give them a place to sleep, and I'm assuming shower perhaps, then they might be more able during the day, if they know they're going to have a place to sleep that night, to go out and try to find a job or try to find something to help themselves.
Before we go any further, I want to get to President Trump's speech to the United Nations, the icing on the cake, if you will. Here's the Washington Post editorial. No, I thought I was reading from that. Actually, yeah, well, this was in the Washington Post, but it's not the editorial. It's from the author of Great Questions of Tomorrow, and it's an op-ed piece by David Rothkopf. He wrote, "Beyond pragmatism, the speech will likely be remembered as the one in which the president of the United States sounded more like a mob boss than a statesman. Think De Niro as Al Capone in The Untouchables, minus the baseball bat. This was a tough guy flexing his muscles so that all in the audience could see how tough he was. The harshest language was reserved for North Korea, outlining the threat it poses. He then went on to say that if it did not denuclearize, then we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission. These are clearly words never, ever to be engraved in marble." What'd you make of the speech, Steve Bertrand?
He seems to be a leader devoid of dignity. There's no sense of dignity at all. And I think speaking the way he did just shows that. It was completely undignified.
What do you mean? Why was it undignified?
To refer to this man who threatens hundreds of thousands of people as Rocket Man, to belittle him that way. You know, not that he deserves great respect, but just to use that sort of language there just shows that he doesn't understand the dignity of his situation.
Or of the venue. I think
the United Nations
is a place for peaceful resolutions, and he's threatening nuclear annihilation.
I mean, frankly, you shouldn't do that at an arena in Ames, Iowa, but it's more at home there at a campaign rally than it is when you are addressing the world and the world's leaders.
Where's your head on this, Scott?
This just reconfirms my view that this is a WWE presidency. You know, hyperbole, name-calling, I'm going to wipe a country off the planet. Hello? That you don't do that. You're president of the United States now. There's a lot of talking points and a lot of issues that he did address that were very important, Iran being among them. But, you know, it gets overshadowed by this petulant child's language.
Yeah, that's the op-ed piece also said this. It said it was schoolboy bullying complete with childish name-calling.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it advances the ball to do that, to threaten to blow him off the map. And also calling him Rocket Man, what is that about?
He flies rockets over Japan.
Yeah, but is that insulting? I mean, I don't even get it.
Insulting? No, I think it's affirming. If I'm Kim Jong-un, I go Rocket Man. I'll take that.
So I'll put that on my satin jacket. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But
I mean, by the way, did you know this? Every citizen of North Korea over the age of 16 is required to have some sort of emblem of one of the Uns, the grandfather, the father, or the current leader, on their clothing. They have to display some homage to the leader. Back to you, already in progress.
I didn't know that, and it changes everything for me. It's one of the things where I get the feeling that he's not, that he's speaking to his base.
That
he's not speaking to the world community, and that he doesn't have a long game here. He doesn't. What are we going to do about North Korea? How's he going to contain North Korea? He's going to need the cooperation of just about all the nations in the world. And this kind of belligerent, bellicose talk isn't going to advance that.
Well, did you see the body language of his chief of staff during the speech, though?
Well,
that was a photo. I'm always leery of a photo.
No, he has like three or four postures where he's rubbing his face, he's shaking his head.
Love the President Trump saying to the United Nations, you got a lot of potential here.
Right.
I like your chances.
Someone else pointed out, an expert actually pointed out the lack of a long game, that he's standing there ridiculing the Iran deal and saying it was the dumbest deal, blah, blah, blah.
It's embarrassing to the United States.
As he's looking to the Europeans who negotiated it and were part of it, too.
And still sign off on it.
And he's saying that, like he's ready to tear it up on one hand, and on the other hand, he's hoping perhaps for some sort of an agreement with North Korea. Well, if you're North Korea, why would you be inclined to agree to anything on paper with the United States or the Trump administration if he seems so willing with his other hand to rip up a recent deal?
So it was a bad speech?
It was a typical speech.
He read it well. It was written by somebody.
Don't say that. Don't say it. Really, are we going to give him points because he read it well?
Oh, I'm telling you this. That resonates.
Every
time he reads a speech well that somebody else wrote, he becomes quote-unquote presidential, and his numbers tick up.
Gerald Ford walked out of the plane safely. Let's give him something for that.
Linda, I'm just telling you the way it plays out on to his base, to Fox News, to some Republicans who see that as a performance worthy of more support.
Yeah. Although afterwards, I really want to, I guess it was a tweet or a comment, I really want to visit Nambia. It's a bigly country where the kafifi grows wild all over.
What's he doing? I don't know what this is.
Yes, the president apparently
referred to Namibia as Nambia.
Or just an African country. He was trying to think of a name, and it says, well, I think I heard this on.
You know, my knowledge of African geography is so poor that I feel like I am not in a position to mock the president for
But, you know, every time we fought, but that's a trap that I don't think you need to put yourself in. That is, if you say, well, but I wouldn't know the name of the leader of Zimbabwe either, you don't have to. Right? You're Eric Zorn, and you're not the president of the United States.
It speaks to something else the president said yesterday in New York, where he was talking, you know, they're going to vote next week on this on the repeal again. And the president said, I thought, and this is all as close to a quote as I can come. He said, I thought on the day I took office, I would sit down and there would be a bill on my desk to repeal and replace Obamacare, and they couldn't get it done. Well, so what does that tell you? That tells you that he has no interest in having any input or any ideas about how it might be fixed. He just wants his name on something to say it was changed.
Well, in the corporate world, you could tell your lieutenants, hey, I want make the deal with the company. I want it on my desk. I'll sign it tomorrow. And it would happen. It would happen because they work for you. Somebody didn't tell him that not all the Republicans,
but
my and none
point
of
is,
the Democrats.
My point is more of the substance of what would be on the paper. He didn't have no desire to have any sway as to how to fix the problem. He just wanted to have someone fix the problem.
We need to get to our recommendations. You've got to do the news.
Yeah, so I fell kind of down the rabbit hole. I've been listening to the Avett brothers a lot lately. Have you listened to them at all?
Avett brothers?
Avett. A-V-E-T-T. And doing that on Pandora, a lot of John Prine came up. And so I started pursuing John Prine, and there's a song called Clay Pigeons that I really like from John Prine. And so I think that's what Elif is going to put up on the website, this song Clay Pigeons. It's about a guy who just sort of seems overwhelmed by his nasty life, and he says, I'm going to go sit on a Greyhound bus for a couple days, let the sun come up and down, smoke cigarettes in the back seat, and talk when I'm ready to talk again. It's really, I'm not sure exactly what the song's about, but I love it. And so then I looked, and it was written by a guy named Blaze Foley. Anyone heard of Blaze Foley? Blaze Foley's this guy born in 49. He was murdered in 1989, and he wrote the song, and was this Merle wrote songs for Merle Haggard and elsewhere.
Yeah, right.
So all of that. So my recommendation is to find a version of Clay Pigeons by John Prine and enjoy it.
How about you, Scott Stannis?
I just came back from over a week enjoying three of our national parks, Zion, where we hiked, climbed, and rappelled, which was awesome. Bryce Canyon, which was stunning, and the North Rim of the Grand Canyon. So I know people probably think about this, or maybe they don't.
What states were you in then? Were you
Utah, southern Utah, and northern Arizona, and it was amazing. The national parks are a wonder, and if you haven't, avail yourself of them because they are spectacular.
I'm regretting that as I get older, I'm getting less and less able to fully enjoy them, and I haven't done it yet. So I got to get out.
Why just want rappelling? We're the same age.
You can't rappel
or hike. I mean, suppose I was 87 instead of 57. Well, I wouldn't be able to enjoy the Grand Canyon as much as a younger person. So I think every year that lapses that I haven't done it.
Get
I'll
out
be,
there, John.
Yeah, Bryce Canyon. Those places are gorgeous.
You've been out there, too?
Yeah, a couple years ago I went out there. It's really wonderful.
Wow.
My recommendation is also a musical. And I was at the Old Town School the other night tuning up my fiddle, and someone noticed the tuner on my fiddle and was taken by it. And it's a Diodario NS micro clip-on tuner. They're these little things that affix to your instrument, and they're always there. You keep them on all the time. And there's this incredible advance in tuning for musicians of all sorts, which is that you used to have a tuner that you'd pull out of your case and click it on, and you'd lose it and so on. And I was amazed that there were musicians out there who didn't know about the Diodario NS. And they're like, you know, $10-$15. So
my recommendation is a Ken Burns Vietnam. We've watched every episode. As you listen to this podcast, at least as we've recorded it, I've caught up. But it took 4 hours last night. We are 7.5 hours in, my family, and it's, I don't want to say tedious, but it's work to get through these. The first two episodes are about the French and Chinese before you really get to the American involvement. And the third and fourth episodes, we're in. And it's just awful. And overshadowing it all is how frustrated you are with the presidents and the generals who are making decisions, the outcome of which you know and they don't.
Don't spoil it for me.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I know. Well, guess what? We don't lose, but we fail to achieve in Vietnam. And it's, I think, very instructive about how we think about North Korea or ISIS or Syria. The idea that you can, with fire and fury, pound somebody into oblivion was lost on them, and I hope it's not lost on us going forward.
Yeah, I'm a little behind you on this, but I feel the same way about it, which is that you see a lot of resonance in this story to what's going on today.
Yeah.
And it's very well done.
Yeah. So that's our Missing Rascals podcast this week, portions of which can be heard on my Saturday show at 11:10.
Yeah, you're going to cause me problems at home.
I just had to say that. Thank you, Eric Zorn. Thank you, Scott Standis. Thank you, Steve Bertrand.
Thank you.
Hey, Ben Cortez, thank you for engineering the Missing Rascals podcast each and every week, and Elif Garris for doing all of the hard work that is putting this together. We'll drop we will drop into the podcast on you next week. And don't forget now, you can see us at the Old Town School of Folk Music, October 7th. We'll record this live on stage. We want you to be part of it. Go to WGNradio.com/events and get your tickets.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.